Welcome to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the WVSA Audio and Video Network. My name is Marcus Cole, Director of Soccer Operations and Branding for the West Virginia Soccer Association. Now, before we begin today's podcast, I want to remind you that once you get an opportunity to check out our content here today, make sure you give us a 5-star rating on our podcast and make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts from. That helps you keep up on the latest content from us and also helps us get the word out to others and let them know that we're providing valuable information for soccer players, coaches, referees, and parents. On the phone with us today is Megan Frank, author, speaker, and coach. Megan, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, you have a website, theteamadultplaybook.com, choosing to be better people for our sporting kids. Why don't you go ahead and explain that to us and why you came up with it?
Sure. Well, it's actually the culmination of almost a decade of research, both living through and researching about youth sports. And it's under the umbrella of my writing tag, which is Choosing to Grow. And at the point where my children were the ages of, I think they were 9, 7, and 4, I realized that I needed to grow through the experience of youth sports if I wanted to end up where I had the vision of our family. Both my husband and I played Division I sports, and we were both coaches. But when I found myself on the sideline of, actually was at a hockey rink and broke up a fight, I realized that the parenting world was a little bit different than everything I'd experienced up to that point. So I wanted to learn how to be a good sports parent and provide information for myself and my husband to be better coaches too for kids. So I started researching, and I spent time interviewing almost 60 people. I collected 600 surveys from people, and over the course of the 10 years played every role I possibly could, partly for research and partly because my kids and their teams needed it as far as board member and administrator and all sorts of things, but collected research along the way. And so now I'm at the point where my kids are growing and leaving home, and I've collected all this information, and I'm ready to now put it down into a way that people can access it. And that's where the website has come from, and working on putting it into a book finally. So that's where I've landed with that particular project.
Wonderful. It is. And there's so much valuable information. I had an opportunity to really get into it yesterday and look over, and just so much great information that you have on there that can help us parents and also coaches as well. Now, you had a post and it really resonated with me, and I want to talk a little bit about that. Those sports parents who sit alone, they don't sit with the other parents during matches. Mm-hmm. I am that way. I have my reasons of why. And it's really funny because you actually went out and stated some of those reasons, because, you know, soccer has been a part of my life since I was a little kid. My high school that I grew up in New England, you know, we were winning state championships back in the early 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. Through my high school career. And West Virginia, I don't believe, adopted soccer at the high school level until 1989. So, okay. I mean, it's, you know, West Virginia is probably about 20 years behind the curve as far as high school soccer goes. And, you know, I hear some of the parents sometimes, and, you know, and in the South, we got a saying, bless their heart. You know, I listen to some of the stuff that comes out of their mouths, and it's hard for me to concentrate and enjoy the game being around those parents. And the great thing is about your post that you had, it's okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I think as part of the research, it's maybe myself and convincing myself that it's okay. Because for a long time, I really wondered why I was so uncomfortable in that environment, sitting with parents and not being on the other side where I was so comfortable as a coach or even on the field as a player. But sitting with parents was really uncomfortable for me. And it took a lot of introspection. And when I spoke with people and read a lot of things, I realized that there are obviously plenty of personalities that show up at sporting events. And I actually created a matrix of personalities, sport personalities, and it was just kind of a caricature of those personalities that you see. And you see a lot of the same kinds of people, you know, like your expert Eddie, who knows everything about everything, and you'll hear it kind of coming out. Or there's commentator Carl, who is commentating the entire game, and all you want is the quiet. But I had to figure out why I was uncomfortable, and that was the first place I had to start. And so I do an exercise actually with the parents for my high school team, where I have them look at those caricatures and say, okay, well, what kind of personality are you? And have the kids say what personality they think their parents are. And it's an interesting conversation because they're not always on the same page. But for me, then, recognizing that, okay, so just because I'm not yelling Yolanda doesn't mean that yelling Yolanda is a bad person. And just because I may know a little bit more about soccer and I've had that more experience doesn't mean that someone else can't have their chatter. So I had to come to terms with where I needed to be comfortable. I certainly don't tolerate toxicity or abuse, and those sorts of things I will call parents out on. I will literally address people if I feel like they're being that way. But a lot of times, if you really listen to what people are saying, they're not trying to be mean. They're not trying to be aggressive or abusive. They are engaging in the game in a way that makes sense to them as in their personality and what their experience has up to that point. So in recognizing that, it helped me to be much more comfortable with my own decision to just move and say, you know what, it's okay that I'm down here. I'm going to watch the game from here, and this is where I'm going to engage. And then at a different point in the day, or if we're traveling with that group of people, I'll try to engage and still have relationship, because that's important too. I think what happens when you're watching a game, you feel like, okay, I'm going to move over here, and now all of a sudden I'm ostracized. There is something about the chemistry of parents that it translates to the chemistry of the team. And so you want to make sure that you try to facilitate that as best you can, but it may not happen during the game. And that's okay. If it's not during the game that it works for you to have that conversation because they really want to be involved in yelling, then you just move yourself away, let them have their yelling moments. And I talk to parents about that. There's one parent on my team who really has to move. I don't know if I have a name for her. I think I do in my caricatures, but she wants to be moving the entire game, and she'll pace the sidelines. And I tell her that she'd be great as a ball kid. Like, literally, if you need a ball and you just need to watch that way, and I'm going to be quiet, I'm going to be standing over here, and I love you and you love me, and it's fine that we're going to watch the game this way. But you have to acknowledge where you are first, and then acknowledge that not everyone's going to be where you are in that particular moment.
And it's really funny too about connecting with the parents outside of the match type of thing, because the experiences that I've seen is that there are some people that I don't enjoy being around during a match, but they're the most wonderful people outside of the match.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I want to be their friend. I don't mind hanging out with them, but you know, when that clock starts and stuff, they turn into something a little bit different, you know, and it's like,
Yep. And it's, I think, just giving people the space to be in a game situation the way that works for them, and to know that, you know, it's just their personality, and it's not I can't tolerate it personally, so I have to move, but that doesn't mean that there's something wrong with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I mean, some people, deal with different things in different ways, and that's okay. I mean, that's fine. Yep. I mean, and like you said before, as long as it's not in a toxic nature, and unfortunately we have some of those parents too, that, you know, that they have some sort of a toxicity with them. And it just doesn't provide. There was just an example of a situation at a game one time that I was at, that there was a group of parents that were shouting things they meant well, but the way that the message was coming across came across completely different than the way that they meant it. And I talked to them a little bit about it afterwards, and I said, listen here, I said, I don't mean to, you know, pry or anything like that. I said, when you're saying this sort of thing in this sort of way, I said, what do you think the message is? Oh, well, I was trying to, you know, do this. And it's like, well, as an outside observer, it came across a little bit like this. And they were like, really? I never realized that way. And I, you know, and one thing that I preach to my children is being self-aware. Being self-aware of who you are and how you are around certain things. And I think that has something to do with it too.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's why the exercise of identifying yourself in these caricature pictures and listening to their own athlete tell them what they think. That was really interesting for a lot of them. There were a couple people very specifically that I know would have a delivery, like you said, like sometimes the delivery is not what they intend. And so, you know, I talk about the fact that the way you're delivering it, everybody hears it. And there are athletes on that field who don't want to hear it that way, including your own kid, but you don't even have an awareness, like you said, of how that's coming off. And so when we have that conversation with our kids, our athletes and their parents, and the athlete says, yeah, you're yelling more than I want you to. And so that was really eye-opening for a couple of the parents. And I will say it affected the way that they attended games. I had one very specific situation where on film we caught one of our players just kind of closing his hand to his dad, because we could hear it on the film. Dad said something and he closed his hand, like, you know, to be quiet. And we caught it on film and we talked about it as a team. You know, like, this is, it's fine to do that there, but have this conversation with your dad later too. Like, this is more than what you as an athlete want to deal with. And having those conversations with our kids, it can be uncomfortable because you have an idea of what you think you want to be doing as a parent, but to not listen to them or what it is that works for them, it's unfair. You know, this is their game. This is literally their game. And so if we don't pay attention to how they want us to show up for their games, then we are doing a great disservice to them.
And it's funny because I've had this growing relationship. My daughter's been playing soccer since she's 4 years old. She's a competitive soccer player. She's in her high school season right now, her senior year. You know, has played with the Olympic Development Program. And we've developed our relationship over the years because I used to be her coach back in her grassroots days. And it's been a developing relationship. We've hit, you know, bumps in the road. You know, Dad, you're kind of, you know, stepping out of bounds with this.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and you know, Dad, you know, you're being a little bit too critical of my play and things along that lines. And I mean, I'm guilty of that, as most other parents are.
Yep.
But I think now that she's gotten to this point and, you know, is getting ready to go off to college to play soccer, I think we've gotten to a point where we can have an open and honest dialogue and
yep.
be okay with it, you know, without being critical, without being defensive. And I think it's just that balance that parents and children have to have. And, you know, they have to have that conversation with each other of, you know, Dad, you're sucking the joy out of me playing this game by
right.
some of the things, you know. Hey, don't tell me that my first touch was, you know, wasn't great today as soon as we get in the car.
Right.
After
right.
it.
Well, And that's you know, engaging in that kind of growth, both of you. You know, I think the thing is that for me, and that's why with this project, I really wanted to grow too. I didn't want it to be just a developing athletes in our house. Like, we're just going to grow them into whatever athletes, because it's not realistic. And being lifelong learners and intentional about fostering relationships with our children, it takes a lifetime. It's a constant give and take, and they're going to mature, and those conversations are going to mature, and the willingness to listen, you know, at age appropriate conversations. You know, a 4-year-old is going to say something very different than a 14-year-old, but to be open to the conversation and asking questions all along with the intent of actively listening to their responses, that's how you get through that journey and intact, with an intact relationship with your family by the time it's all said and done.
Now, can you give us some examples of how we can be better parents to our athletes?
Well, and I think it kind of starts with that openness to learning alongside. I think I personally, and my husband and I, definitely made the mistake with our firstborn, having an idea and expectation of what we thought things were going to look like. I think it just is, it's par for the course. You're young parents, you have finally, your kids are involved in athletics, and you think, oh my gosh, it's going to be this X, Y, or Z, and they're going to do this, and they're going to be, you know, follow our track or whatever, or even go on a track that we envision for them. And learning through the course of parenting that literally their path is going to be theirs. I mean, I talk to a lot of people about the fact that we have our sports stories. We all have them. We all have our own history of what our sports story is. And our job as parents is not to write the sports story for our children, but to provide plenty of exposure to everything, and then help them hone in on the things that are going to make their sports story theirs. So, you know, I am a big proponent of making sure that kids do a ton of activities, a ton of different activities, physical activities, for a while, until they start to really hone in on that thing that is theirs. And you discover then that path with them, instead of finding and determining what that path is going to be before they've even gone there. Now, naturally, I think our kids gravitated to the sports that we coach and played, partly because, you know, we had a lot of fun doing those things with them and they stuck with it, but they were also exposed to a lot of other things too. And had something else caught, we would have followed that path with them for sure.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I've been involved with soccer my entire life. You know, I work for the State Soccer Association, and I remember my son, coming up, and, you know, he started playing soccer because I was involved in soccer. Same thing with my daughter. And then, you know, my son just really didn't enjoy playing soccer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he'd go in, he'd score a goal, and he'd be like, all right, Dad, I'm ready to come out.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was like he was content sitting over on the bench enjoying the halftime snack and and things along that lines. And then, you know, we found him into swim, and, you know, now he's in his freshman year at WVU Tech, and he's on the men's swim team.
Right.
So, I mean, it took until he was 9 years old to kind of figure that out a little bit, but he ended up finding what he enjoyed best. And, you know, swim was so new to me. I didn't know any swimmers growing up. We didn't have a high school program. I don't even think we had a pool anywhere near where I lived. So, I mean, you know, this was unfamiliar territory. And I think that may be kind of scary a little bit for some parents.
Yeah. And I think that unfortunately they steer kids away from the things that are unfamiliar or uncomfortable. But if looking at it with an ounce of curiosity instead, and like, okay, what can we all learn about this, about you, about this sport, about, you know, the people that are involved in this sport? There's so much to learn, and to be excited about that instead of intimidated by it, it provides lots of opportunities for kids to find their niche and their passion. And what a great thing that, you know, you stuck with it. Look at what your son's able to do. That's awesome.
Right, exactly. And what's funny about it is that I was his coach in high school. We started a high school swim team, and I ended up being his coach because he was the only member on the team.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
You know, so it was like, you know, I was kind of like, you know, I told him, I said, you know, son, I have no clue what I'm, you know, what I'm telling you, you know, but the great thing about it was, is that he was able to do club as well as high school at the same time, because it's an individual sport. So, you know, I relied on everything that he learned. He was almost self-coached to an extent.
What a gift, though. That's such a gift that you provided, you know, and I think that's I think, the challenge for parents is to be open to something like that, because that can be so scary and intimidating, but I think it's awesome.
Absolutely. Now, you had a great YouTube video that I checked out yesterday, and I think it's a subject that, you know, needs to be talked about a little bit more. And you were talking about providing fair playing time. I think it's such a great YouTube video for both coaches as well as parents to understand a little bit more. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about that video?
Sure. Well, I had written a blog post when I was doing my research about fair playing time. And one of the experts that I interviewed, she's a professor at the University of Minnesota. And I said, what was the one thing that you would fix about youth sports if you could? And she said, I would have fair playing time until kids are 14. And I thought that was a really interesting comment. But I think, especially with team sports, it's a really, really big bone of contention for most people. If you talk to any variety of team sport parent when their kids are little, if they're not getting fair playing time, they're not playing, they're traveling and they're sitting the bench, you're going to have very, very upset people. And legitimately, because the entire point of putting our children in sports or activities is that they can participate. So I think what's happened, unfortunately, is this adultification of youth sports, that it needs to look like pro sports or it needs to look like college sports, because we see those on television. And there's a certain way that those are navigated and managed, and that's appropriate for the college and the professional levels. When you get to the youth level, it needs to be the youth game, and the youth game is all kids are participating. What's tough for so many youth coaches is that they want to win, and there's parents who want to win. And so they're forgetting that the entire purpose of the youth environment is to provide for all children and develop all children. They get so trapped on the winning that they forget to put kids in at this fair amount of time. And so if we could literally just fix that and recognize that it is the youth model. That is a youth model. And as you get into high school and you start to be at the varsity level, things start to change a little bit. And by college, obviously, it's very different, and pros, you know, its own thing. But we can't treat the youth environment like a pro or a college program, because it's not. And we have a responsibility as adults to make sure that all the children we're raising, no matter whether they are the best kid on the team or the worst kid on the team, that we are giving them an opportunity to participate.
What's interesting about that is I unfortunately was guilty a little bit of that back when I first started coaching, and I ended up going through some of the coaching courses through U.S. Soccer and started to understand a little bit more of just a little bit of the psychology behind coaching, and I read more and studied more. And I ended up, you know, I feel bad today to those players that I didn't give as equal or, you know, fair playing time as probably they should have, because I'm a firm believer that, you know, you have to have an opportunity to be able to put into practice what you learn during training sessions, because you can't replicate game speed in a training session. It's really hard to do. So, you know, these players need an opportunity to be able to try that new skill and be able to attempt those things. And they need that time during a match to be able to do that. And it was such a revelation to me one day that, you know, and in some instances I felt that I let that player down in
I think it's a learning curve, right? Because I think we come with our experiences and we look at it through adult lenses. And so it's very hard to back up again and now look through the eyes of a child at what it is that they are hoping to gain and what they need too, and think about it from that perspective. And I understand. I mean, I'm a competitive person too. I don't like to lose. And most people who are in a sporting environment, they don't like to lose. That's why we play these games. We know that that's what we're going for. But in the youth environment specifically, there has to be a way to foster just the participation part of it, and good coaches can kind of manipulate things enough that you are able to provide those playing opportunities for kids, even if you are, you know, possibly sacrificing some goals. You might get scored on, but they can't learn unless they're in that environment.
Some people get into a situation and you had a post that you had recently talking about the connection between a father and his daughter playing sports. I have that situation, and I thought it was pretty insightful what you talked about. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, I think that post specifically, it starts from the place where I, as a daughter of a father who was very sports heavy, that was the language that he used to try to communicate with us. And there were three girls in my house. So we figured out pretty quickly that if we were on the basketball court or if we were out playing catch with the football, that was our time with dad. And so I know for me personally, it certainly formed my understanding about sport, and my intention and passion about athletics was from my relationship with my dad. And I also have had the privilege of watching my husband and our two daughters. And he was a hockey goalie, and one of our daughters decided to become a hockey goalie too. And so he has had the opportunity to coach her. And watching that relationship has been such a blessing to me, because his involvement goes beyond just his time coaching her, but I see a bond with them in that over sport, because it's a very easy way for them to connect. They'll watch games together, they watch highlights together, they are on, you know, they're on the ice, and she's a senior now this year, and so they've had lots of opportunities, and it's been a really lovely relationship to watch develop. And I know that it's beyond hockey, because their bond is started there, but that's not the only place that it stayed. And I think that that's the thing about fathers and daughters. Sometimes that is the easiest way to connect, especially with teenage girls. You know, you can be active with them for a second, and then, you know, those endorphins are kicking in, you have a better conversation. There's lots of really good things that can happen between a father and a daughter when activity is part of what you're doing. Now, there's a fine line there. I've definitely seen that go really awry with some father-daughter relationships, where the dad doesn't listen as much to what the daughter needs, and there's too much pushing, and there's too much aggression with trying to get them to be the sporting kid that they thought they wanted. So there is a very fine line that needs to be walked with that, with the father-daughter relationship around sport. But I think if you can do it right, it literally can be one of the best ways that a relationship can blossom between a father and daughter.
I agree. And it's funny, just everything that you were just saying now just resonated with me so much with my daughter. And I think the biggest thing that I was able to do, and I think she's now developing it as well, but we can see those triggers that start coming where we know that the conversation that we're having is going south and will go south quickly. So we kind of end it. Yep. And move on to something else. Maybe we'll come back to it at some point. Maybe we won't. but you know, it's being that self-awareness of, you know, you're having a great conversation and, you know, you'll be watching a match on TV and you'll say, see how they're doing that there, how this player's doing this, you know, on your game, you know, during your match on Tuesday, you know, we'll start talking, you know, what do you think you could have done, you know, better? Oh, well, I wasn't coming back to the ball enough. I wasn't, I wasn't coming into space enough, you know, and it's all well-meaning and stuff. And then sometimes dad pushes it a little bit too far and stuff, you know, and then you kind of have to walk it back just a little bit just to, you know, cause then, you know, then the walls go up around the daughter and I'm not listening to dad. He's an idiot, you know, that
yes,
kind of thing.
Well, and I think what's been good to watch in my house is my husband's from a house of all boys. So for him to just have any, you know, like trying to figure out girls all along has been quite hilarious.
God bless
for me,
him.
But it's, you know, but he's done it so well. And I think there is that growth that happens in the relationship and for both people. And so patience with that is another thing. You know, I think just because you screwed up that conversation with your kid today doesn't mean that you can't back up, try to do it over again, and then just keep working at whatever, you'll figure those things out. And so, you know, you have a senior, we have a senior daughter, and that's, by the time they're about that age, that's, you want to be where you are and where we are, where that is a good relationship, but you know where the line is and you don't cross it anymore because you crossed it enough when they were little. And that's, it's okay that you're going to make those mistakes trying to foster that relationship, as long as you're constantly working to try to improve both yourself and your relationship.
It's hard. It's really is hard. And it's been a learning experience, you know, and I do cross that line but I'm becoming more aware of when I cross that line. I'll say something. Yep. I'll be like, yep, that wasn't good. You know,
and she'll tell,
like,
you now too, right?
I mean, that's yeah. And it's just, but the great thing is just being able to have that conversation and be able to have that honest conversation with your kids. I mean, I know the one thing that we, you know, and we're drilling it into our daughter right now, and we did with our son, is that, okay, you know, your goal is to go off and play sports in college. It's hard. It's a hard, hard thing to do. I don't think people realize just how hard it is. And, you know, my son, started, a couple of weeks after school started, you know, so he's got this new experience of being on his own for the first time, you know, having these college classes to deal with. And now a couple of weeks into the school year, you know, now he's starting swim training. He's got his first meet this weekend. And, it, I went down and had dinner with him this past weekend. And I asked him, I said, how are you doing? I said, how are you really doing? He said, I'm tired. And I said, yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
You know, you should be. I mean, it's a job.
It is hard. It is a job. And that's one thing that, you know, both my husband and I have that perspective. So we've shared that with our kids all along. And, you know, I don't know what the younger two are going to do, but our oldest realized that, you know, he's going to be an intramural guy in college. Like, that's okay. And that was, he played all through high school, but he heard us talk about how much of a job that was. And I think he realized for himself, like, I'm not sure I've got that. I don't know if I have that part in me, but the other two, who knows? We're very honest with them about that, because it is not easy. It's very hard.
And you have to want it. You have to,
you
really do. I mean, you have to sit there and say to yourself, you know, I understand that this is, you know, I'm going to be tired. I'm going to be sore. I'm going to be all these things. And it's like, I'm okay, because, you know, and I asked my son that too. I said, you know, cause I mean, after the season, obviously we'll, you know, talk to him a little bit and say, you know, okay. Cause I didn't want him to make any decisions in his mind while the season was starting up, because the learning curve was so hard and the grind was going to be so hard. And now that he's, you know, been into it about 5-6 weeks, now it's like, yeah, it's gotten easier. I've adapted well, you know. And I always told him, I said, you know, just, I said, the only thing you can control is control your controllables. Make sure you're eating well, make sure you're hydrating, make sure you're getting plenty of sleep, you know, get your homework done, study, you know, work hard. I said, and those, you know, those other things, you know, usually kind of work themselves out to an extent. And then after the season, you know, it'll be like, you know, is this something you want to do for 3 more years?
Yep.
You know, or do you, or do you want to go, or do you want to, you know, just be a student?
Right.
And that's okay.
Yep. But he'll know then, you know, what he's deciding at that point, because he'll have gone through it. So, yeah, it's a thing. And I know that most families don't necessarily recognize how hard that really is. You know, like everyone's shooting for it, but then when people get there, they realize, wait, this isn't as easy or fun as, you know, playing when I was 10. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, well, we're going to wrap up our conversation there, Megan. We certainly appreciate your time and coming on our program today. Now, if somebody wants to reach out to you and find out more about you and some of the stuff that you're producing, some of the content, where can they find you on social media?
Well, I have a Twitter account, which is, oh gosh, I never remember what it is. I think it's Megan Frank with an underscore CTG. And Megan has the MEA in it. So on Twitter, there's a lot of where I'll put my Team Adult Playbook information. I also have a Facebook page for the Team Adult Playbook. It's Choosing to Grow, the Team Adult Playbook, because Choosing to Grow is the umbrella for my writing. And then on my writing website, meganfrake.com or theteamadultplaybook.com. That's where a lot of that content will be found.
And folks, we encourage you to go check out that content, because like I said, I mean, there's just a lot of valuable insight there, and being able to, you know, hopefully foster some better relationships with your children that are involved in sports. I mean, I've learned a few things just checking out some of the stuff that you've had that, you know, that I sat there and kind of thought, yeah, I didn't really even think about it that way. So it was nice to have another perspective on that. So thank you so much for being on the program today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for listening to the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast here on the WVSA audio and video network. Make sure you go ahead and give our podcast a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcast from. And we'll see you next week.